Welcome, everybody, to the Beyond the Road podcast, the trucking industry podcast presented by ATS. And I am Justin. I'm your host. I'm here today joined with Reed Egan and Jason Wald from our pricing group and specialized group. Can you two quick just give an intro on your background here at ATS and your title, your role, your responsibilities?
Sure. I can go first. I'll take over from Reed. Jason Wald, I'm the Network Development Manager for ATS Specialized. I've been with the company 22 years now, so worked in a lot of different areas of ATS and now working primarily on pricing and rates and trying to make sure we could get good paying freight for all our drivers.
My name is Reed Egan, Corporate Pricing Manager. Been with ATS for about 6 years now.
Okay, so you guys are both involved in pricing on some level, right? Where do those differences separate or combine?
Jason's focus really on the driver, the assets, making sure that we're getting freight for the specialized division. I'm more broad, you know, we're doing the logistics division, vans, we're, you know, servicing a lot of other general freight.
Right. Yeah, we've certain lanes work well for us on the asset side based on, you know, different outbound freight areas and what kind of volumes come out of different freight areas. So I'm primarily focused on what rates we need for different lanes, knowing that certain lanes are going to fit us better. We'll be able to command a higher dollar on certain lanes than we can on others, and really working on how we can get more of that business for the assets.
So for a non-transportation person, how would a rate fit better for your assets versus not?
Yeah, there's a lot of different factors that can go into that. The flexibility of the shipment, different trailer types you can load, delivery locations obviously play a big factor in it. For us, for example, we don't have a lot of outbound customers in places like Utah or Wyoming, so our inbound rates need to be higher going to those locations, because we know when the driver gets there, he's going to have to deadhead a long ways to get another load, or wait an extra extended period of time to get another load. So we want to make sure we're pricing accordingly. Whereas Reed on his side, if he's thinking through on the brokerage side, they might not need the same dollar amount that we need, because maybe they can find a carrier that's based out of that area. So
yeah, you're a carrier, and you focus where your drivers live, and you stack that on top of where your opportunities are, where your customers, where your loads, and then whether that fits or not, are you targeting the right areas? So on the brokerage side, you can really expand that out. You have all of the carriers, all of the opportunities. So you're really just hoping you find somebody's backhaul. You're really trying to find the guy that's trying to get home. He'll do it a lot cheaper than a head haul on our assets.
Makes complete sense. So how has the year been so far in the open deck market?
Well, I'll get started. So it's the last year or so has been challenging. Freight volumes have been down, and then rates have been depressed because there's just not as much volume out there, especially on the flatbed side. The last month or so, month and a half, you know, we've kind of seen a trend where that's maybe starting to change a little bit. For us on the flatbed side, seasonality kind of takes effect right now. You've got summer months tend to get busier for us. Things like construction starts happening more frequently in the northern half of the country. That definitely plays a role in more volume available. And the more volume available tends to lead to rates coming up. So, we're starting to see that turn a little bit. The hope is that the year continues that way, and we can keep, increasing those rates for our drivers.
Yeah, we've been on the trough for a while now. I don't think there's a lot of changes yet this year. We've just been scooping on the bottom. Yeah. It's a broad average. So we're anticipating that things might get better throughout the year. So we're trying to plan our contracts and our pricing around that and try to push that CPM up. I mean, there's only so long that you can sit on the bottom before drivers are just unhappy. They move. Grass is greener, and so kind of got to control that.
So, Jason, you mentioned some seasonality coming into play. When will that? Do we expect that to start to hit in May? Has that already started? What can customers and transportation providers expect in May, as opposed to what's happened so far through the start of the year?
Yeah, sure. You know, like I mentioned, as spring starts to warm up in the northern half of the country, and you lose the snow and the ice and that kind of stuff, you do see more volumes starting to increase on the flatbed side. And that starts, you know, a little bit in April. It really kind of picks up steam through May and June.
Can I interject here for a second? Yeah. Why do you see more volumes once it starts to warm up?
I kind of go back to the construction piece of it. You know, it's if you think about the northern half of the country, when you get a lot of snow and ice on the ground, there's not a lot of construction or as much construction going on. So you've got that different commodities related to that, air handling units, steel, lumber in some instances, you know, starting to pick up steam as far as volumes. You know, you get starting in the earlier part of the year, you start to get a little bit of more of the ag and tractor business kind of starts taking off as you know, customers, Deeres and your Cats of the world start looking to try to supply their dealers with newer machinery. So that starts to pick up. That's really kind of starts in February and, you know, keeps kind of going a little bit through this time of the year. So that kind of all leads to May being May and June really kind of being good months for us.
Yeah, I would sound off that, you know, projects kind of get started. We talk wind turbines and all the fall off stuff that comes with it. You got a lot of legal freight that goes on flatbeds for that. You got a lot of prep and site. And so, yeah, that stuff picks up throughout the year, too.
So how do you prepare for that? How do you prepare for that influx of either demand or freight coming down?
Sure. So, you know, if I'm thinking it through on a pricing from a pricing standpoint, you know, we've started a few weeks back really trying to evaluate rates and lanes and you know, talking about making certain increases in rates so that we can take a better advantage of increased freight volumes and the potential for that being out in the marketplace. And you know, we review a lot of that and really try to work to push rates up so that we're ready for it when it starts.
Yeah, I mean, you have a baseline freight with your contract freight. You have about 50% of your volume kind of already tied down, and you kind of understand where the ebbs and flows of where your drivers are, so you build around that. You look at the spot market. You price these projects maybe a little bit different than you would a contract freight, whether it fills a gap or if you're going out of your way to pick it up.
That can be a little bit of a risky proposition overall, though, can it?
If you
misjudge the market?
Yeah. I think some markets you win, some markets you lose, you know, depending on how far in advance you're pricing it, how well prepared you were for it. Your contract rates, you know, you lock it in for a full year, you never know what's going to happen in the spot market. That driver might have other opportunities. If you're brokering freight and he's got 10 other loads that pay double yours, you're going to have a really hard time making money.
So you touched on the construction industry picking up as the ground is starting to thaw out. Are there any other industries that you could start to expect some seasonality, either just a normal course year historically wise or otherwise, we're maybe seeing a spike just in activity on that maybe isn't directly related to seasonality, but might be spiking in today's current market or segments of the country, Mexico.
You could talk about that. Yeah. Mexico had a pretty big start of the year already in Q1. I feel like there's more shipments coming to Mexico than ever before.
What do you tie that to, Reed?
I don't know. Just great trade relationships, a lot of manufacturing happening on that side for cost effectiveness. And then they just rely on shipments over the border where you can transload it. You can have more options on getting that freight across the border.
So talking about nearshoring, would be moving those operations closer. You're spot on. We definitely have seen increased demand out of Mexico. We're starting to see some change of behavior on how the Mexican freight has been handled in some spots where it was predominantly almost exclusively through service for a lot of years. And now transloading has been introduced as a solution out there. And I think that's basically to keep up with the demand that's coming out of the country. There isn't enough asset-only providers or that have the equipment available for that transloading or that through service offering.
Yeah, there's a ton of volume that comes through there. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of opportunities. And then the ports are kind of a mess right now, but even throughout the last year where you had the Red Sea, the Panama Canal, there's a lot going on, and there's a lot of reason why nearshoring people would go through Mexico instead. So, I mean, do you see any port activity right now or anything that might change in May?
We have noticed, obviously, the Port of Baltimore, with everything that's going on there, has been slow. You know, as they've shifted, customers in the ports have shifted to different you know, facilities. You know, Georgia, I know Brunswick has been busy. Norfolk, Virginia, I know we've seen some increases out of those areas from port activity, and that's, you know, related directly to the bridge collapse in Baltimore. So, yeah, we've seen some of that.
What happens when an event like that happens for an asset network?
Well, you really got to stay close to the marketplace. You know, initially for us, it was contacting the customers that we know ship a lot of volume out of those areas, especially the Port of Baltimore. That's a port that's been very busy for us on the flatbed side. on the ag side, specifically on construction equipment. So it was staying close to those customers initially, finding out what they're going through, you know, what different options they're exploring for ports to bring stuff in, so that we know, you know, where that flow might shift to. Some customers reached out to us looking for different rates out of different facilities so that they could kind of, you know, compare and contrast on what different ports, you know, how they might react if they shifted business from Baltimore to other facilities. So, required us to react a little bit to that and then, you know, take a look at what our pricing is doing for in and out of those areas as we try to stay close to market conditions and volumes for the different areas.
Reed, network-wide or just industry-wide, what do you envision for just kind of regional pricing changes as the year turns from, you know, winter into spring into summer? How does that play out across the country just with basic seasonality out there? There's certain areas I know like busier at certain times of the year.
Yeah, certain pockets. Obviously, they're going to gravitate towards the Midwest again. You know, they're going to look for miles more often. There's going to be a lot more over the road through the West Coast. Q1 historically had a lot less miles than average. There was a lot more local shipments. That was kind of the biggest push. You're manufacturing, you want to get closer to your end destination and pay less for shipping. I think we'll see that start to change. And then coastal, as you find new ports, you're going to have to ship further on that stuff. General seasonality, I think you're going to see the Southeast kind of lighten up on rates. You're going to force a lot of capacity onto reefers. On the West Coast, too, I think we had a really rainy season in California, so I think produce is going to be pretty rough over there. And that always kind of plays impacts on van rates, too. So it's a couple pockets of opportunity, though.
All right, so rates are a hot topic right now, price and rates. And it's not always as simple as what that rate is on the routing guide, what that rate is on a piece of paper. So what kind of advice or what kind of feedback would you have to give into as far as what metrics, what parts go into pricing, and then what kind of considerations go into when we're pricing something, and then what are the risks of just selecting that low-cost carrier on paper each time as opposed to evaluating other criteria?
We're trying to price so that our drivers are making a weekly expectation in revenue. They're paying their lease. Those are the variables that we're putting in the baseline of our cost. You have a lot of service, you know, and a lot of variability on the open deck too. Drop trailers, crane offload, stuff like that you price differently. But at the end of the day,
why does that stuff get priced differently?
You know, you're providing extra trailers, you got depreciation on those trailers, you got to move the equipment and reposition it into the site. You have to really change the way your network works for a new opportunity. That initial cost is pretty high, and you kind of spread that out depending on how long you're in partnership with that carrier. And then appointment windows, if you're a crane offload, you got to really hit those appointments. Everyone has to be on the same page, otherwise you're wasting man hours. So there's a lot that goes into those things. That's where a premium comes in that a low-cost carrier wouldn't have. But when we're pricing, we're just making sure that those drivers they're getting that RWT, that revenue per week per truck, that keeps them float.
You know, from a customer, if I was thinking about it through a customer's eyes, you know, it really, in my opinion, is true from a carrier standpoint, you get what you pay for, right? You know, at ATS, we have good quality equipment, we have good service, we have good drivers. You know, customers that want to lean towards, you know, quality service and quality drivers are going to lean towards wanting to use us. Brokers can always come out there and you know, try to undercut rates. But, you know, in my career, I found normally when you're undercutting rates, they end up suffering on service. And then the next thing you know, their customers are calling us saying, you know, we're looking for some better quality service, you know, and that's where we can kind of take advantage of that. And that's where, you know, we can use our expertise, our experience, our quality drivers, our quality equipment to demand more of a premium from the market.
And there is a pocket of freight where a low-cost provider really succeeds. There's some commodities. There's some flexibility. Like if you think of like lumber and shingles, heavy stuff that you can just get in, pick up whenever. They don't care about what time and transit time it takes you to deliver and that you're showing up on time. And those are kind of the commodities that you can probably get away with those brokers and low-cost carriers. But what kind of commodities do you think would generate like a high premiums? What do you see them coming back to?
I mean, commodities are definitely one. Anything that's sensitive from a service nature sure is one. Just off the top of my head, I think of things like aircraft engines, right? You want to make sure you've got a quality driver and a quality carrier hauling that kind of thing, because it's a high value commodity.
I think there's some line formed at if it's business to business or business to consumer kind of product as well. Think about lumber,
point.
You think about shingles, you think about anything that it might be sold to a contractor or a construction firm, but ultimately it's being used by a consumer, and the margins just aren't available within that company to be able to spend what they need on transportation.
Right.
It's usually not as urgent. Whereas if you're selling a piece to a power plant, that is more custom made. It is more critical to some kind of piece of infrastructure that if they got to pay an extra $500 to get a load delivered on time and have that confidence by selecting a carrier with a better track record, that $500 isn't going to weigh as much in the pocketbook if it gets that plant running up to optimal levels or open on time.
That could save them hundreds of thousands of dollars just by, you know, being on time versus being a day or two late. I mean, that can be hundreds of thousands of dollars in delayed costs for a power plant, those kind of things. And that's the kind of that when you talk about trying to find different freight that fits that premium rate, I guess, structure, that would be a good fit.
Yeah, you look at any sort of cargo values, high, you know, maybe weight, OD, those things start to add a little premium too. You need a higher class of driver. There's only a select few people,
and there's only so many providers that operate with those services available,
right?
Exactly. There's certainly carriers that don't do any overdimensional,
sure,
that don't have double drops,
yeah,
that don't have whatever equipment might be needed on whatever load.
Right.
Yeah, when you talk mass average of open deck freight, it's all flatbed and step deck. And this capacities of those two are even different from each other. But yeah, those RGNs, double drops, all that stuff is a little more specialized.
Right. Good. So between you two, who's following the leader here? We're going to go a little off topic here. You guys got a lot of similarities between you two. I'd like to dig into those a little bit.
Oh, geez. Where's this going?
You got similar hair color and hairstyles to a degree. Jason has gotten longer since Reed had came in with longer hair.
Yeah, true. I'm leading the charge.
Yeah, I think so.
Reed bought a little motorcycle. Jason bought a big motorcycle.
He had to one-up me.
You guys both enjoy pickleball.
We do. Yes, that's true.
So I'm wondering, is one of you emulating the other, or are these all just coincidences? And if so, who's emulating who?
Well, I'm older, so it would be natural that Reed would be looking up to me.
Reed had longer hair and motorcycle prior.
I do want to make it known that I'm the only non-pickleball champion of 2023 in this room right now.
That's true.
Yeah.
I don't know where we can go after that. I mean, that's pretty much... the drop the mic moment there.
Yeah,
well, I appreciate you guys' time here today. I know you're both busy. A lot of good insight for what to expect in the month of May and even beyond as some of that seasonality plays out. You guys touched on more than just obviously this month, so appreciate you guys' time here today.
Yeah, it was fun. Thank you. Let's do it again.
Yeah, everybody else, thank you for joining us. And until next month, if you're just craving information and content before that, just go to atsinc.com, go to our Learning Hub, and there's a lot of information out there to peruse, and we'll see you next month. Thank you.